Walt Whitman praises pioneers. He says, "We detachments steady, throwing down the edges, through the passes, up the mountain steep, conquering, holding, daring, venturing as we go the unknown ways. Pioneers, oh, pioneers." Now, Whitman, writing in the mid-19th century, was speaking of the literal pioneering that we associate with that period in American history. The people he's addressing are youthful, sinewy persons who carry pistols and sharp axes, the better to fell primeval forests and stem rivers and pierce the virgin land. Now, those are Whitman's phrases. Some are fanged and warlike. And that's a description of a woman. I just love it. All struggle and some die, but pioneers keep on keeping on. The vision is a new, unknown, but better world. James William Tompkins was a pioneer. He wasn't exactly fanged and warlike. His courage was more like respectful and peace-loving. But he was a pioneer in personal life and journey, and a pioneer in this fellowship. His personal journey shines with integrity, and the undoubted pain that personal philosophical pioneering can create in life. Jim was born on July 4th, 1919, in Portland, Oregon, and reared in that town. From birth, he was cradled in the arms of his parents' devout fundamentalist faith. The Bible was the strict, literal, absolute truth, and one could rest in the certainty of accepting Jesus Christ as one's risen Savior, the only road to salvation. On Sunday evenings in the 20s, and remember, he was born in 1919, they played church in his family. His sister played hymns on the piano. She was the organist for the church. His father was the congregation, and little Jim was the preacher, finding a Bible verse and explaining it to the assembled multitudes. This was father's way of babysitting why mother and grandmother went to church on Sunday night. After a terrible automobile accident in 1937, when he was in a coma and then paralyzed for months, he was healed enough to head off with a friend to Wheaton College in Illinois, which was an interdenominational school. And there he met his lifelong friend, Dr. Gordon H. Clark. Dr. Clark taught religion of the whole person, mind as well as heart, and he opened the door for Jim to begin applying his formidable intellect to religion. It may not surprise you to know that Wheaton terminated Dr. Clark in 1940. Jim then went to theological school, beginning to raise enough questions that caused one professor to tell him perhaps he needed to reconsider his calling to ministry. He didn't at that point. He graduated in 1945, the same year he married the lovely and talented Charlene Boggs, daughter of medical missionaries who served in India. He chose her partly for having the talents and personality ideally suited to being a minister's wife. And these are his words now: congeniality, independence, objectivity, prudence, and tolerance. Jim and Charlotte served the Helix, Oregon Baptist Church for a year. And there Jim considered what he called his theological distraction, read, agonizing analysis of fundamental beliefs. While discovering that parish ministry involves universes of duties never taught in seminary or even imagined, they left after a year. In 1946, Jim found a life-changing book in a Boston bookstore, written in 1851, just as the new criticism of the Bible had begun, just barely. It was by William Rathbone Gregg, and it was called The Creed of Christendom. It was a rational, scholarly approach to the Bible. and he and Charlotte worked through it. In his memoirs, Jim says, "For the first time, we actually attempted to look at the Bible as we would any other book, not as," and this is capitalized bold, "God's plenary, inspired, and inerrant word." The family moved to Portland, where Jim worked at Secular Pursuits. He stopped being a minister at that point. The family did attend the First Baptist Church until 4-year-old son Tim was heard singing around the house, "Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so." They quit going to the Baptist Church. They changed affiliation and became part of the group of young families who founded the West Hills Unitarian Fellowship in Southwest Portland, which is still there. They moved to Boise in 1962, where they joined the little group of Unitarian Universalists meeting in Cloverdale School. Charlotte recalls about 35 adults and about 10 children. This pilgrimage caused a vast chasm between Jim and his father and old friends. Jim states in a much later sermon here in Boise that he and his father always kept their respect for each other. That is undoubtedly true. At the same time, both sons, older Tim and baby Tom, younger Tom, whom many of us know for in lots of ways, they have both spoken to me of the, quote, never to be reconciled rift, that's Tim's words, between Jim and his father. Tim says, "The life of a pioneer can be more than rhetorically hard. It can mean hurting people and causing misery." Before, though, I speak about how Jim's presence shaped, changed, and perhaps saved our church, fortunately, with a minimum of hurt and misery, let me say something concerning why I'm talking about him. In our call to worship, we heard educator and philosopher John Dewey say, in a precise intellectual style that reminds me of Jim's, Dewey says, "Ours is the responsibility of conserving, transmitting, rectifying, and expanding the heritage of values we have received, that those who come after it may receive it more solid and secure, more widely accessible, and more generously shared than we have received it." Remembering our forebears, those who planted the trees under whose shade we are sheltered, is a spiritual exercise, bringing us to a sense of humility and a sense of what we owe to the generations who will come after us. Celebrating those trusty tree planters brings us to the realization that we are, all of us, everyone, always creating the future as we live our lives. In ways that we mostly can't foresee, we are pioneering, and we have choices about how we live in the present. We have responsibility for shaping the future. This is Booth's second annual Pioneer Sunday. I and numerous others are hoping you and all your new ministers will continue the tradition far into the future, into a time where the vast majority of the congregation has no idea, no direct experience with who we are in this room right now. But just maybe you or you or you or you may have given so much of your heart and your time and your spirit and your talent that a Pioneer Sunday in 2053 will be dedicated to you. This service honors the people who gave so much of themselves to create and sustain the foundation of what we cherish today. And it also encourages each of us to spend a little spiritual time reflecting on what we hope that we ourselves are bringing to birth as we live our lives. When we look backward in clear-eyed gratitude, We can learn and we can make our future with common sense and vision and openness. We can create a place where wonderful things are happening in our unique time and place, and where wonderful things will happen that we can't even dream of here and now. Everyone associated with this fellowship is in a much greater sense than usual a pioneer this year and in the next two or three as I retire in June and new ministers follow after 25 years of me. I'm going to spend the rest of my sermon speaking of the profound ways that Jim shaped this congregation. And as I do, I ask you to make a commitment check to see in what ways you would like your commitment to be more like Jim's, whatever your belief system, or whether you would have believed in what he believed or didn't. For instance, will you be able to find it in your hearts and your pockets and the wherewithal to significantly increase your pledge? For another instance, if you are considering applying for Quest, which Jackie spoke to us about, as you grow and deepen and discover soul insights that change and enrich you, will you also know that you're a pioneer and resolve to take your lessons back to the congregation from which this program grew? This is a cherished spiritual home. This is a beacon in our community. And all such communities need joyful, deeply committed companions on the journey. How about coming to Sunday, one more Sunday, coming to church one more Sunday a month? Now I look around and I see for some of you this would be five or six Sundays a month. So, how about volunteering for something? Jim Tompkins, in those long ago days when the Boise Unitarian Fellowship was tiny, needed no such exhortations. There's a parenthetical irony that I want to get out of the way before I expound on Jim's invaluable contributions to making us who we are. He served as unofficial minister here for many years, doing all the things ministers do. But he saw himself as more of a trusted servant than anything else. And when a search committee was formed in 1980 to call the first paid full-time minister, he spoke passionately against it. He and Charlotte were shining stars in our congregation, although neither of them would cop to such a grandiose description. Jim is the focus of this morning's sermon since he served as our unofficial minister for years, but Charlotte was an inseparable part of our church life as she has been since Jim's death in 1998. Son Tim said she was, quote, a nearly ideal preacher's wife, active listener, a good reader to herself and aloud, compassionate, loyal, energetic, and ready to speak her mind when the situation was right. Now, I would note that all of these things, plus her unfailing generosity in sharing her considerable gifts, also make her an ideal congregation member. At the risk of embarrassing you to pieces, Charlotte, we thank you profoundly. I have read a lot by and about Jim, and I've heard what old-timers have to say. From that, I believe that the greatest gift he gave to us was understanding what it is to be in community. Alan Schwartzman declares, Jim was the de facto spiritual, and he wrote that in quote in capitals, the de facto spiritual voice and leader of the fellowship, despite his protestations to the contrary. He married us, buried us, sermonized us in the most intellectual voice, and was there to counsel and unite us as a fledgling religious institution. You notice fledgling, that's the word that Liz used. Not quite able to fly yet. Everyone speaks of his intellectual sermons, and I've read them, they are. Folks speak of him as kind and thoughtful. Many speak of his occasional dry humor. He once started a very serious sermon referring to his non-existent cooking skills, and he said, Every time I make a TV dinner, I break out into a test pattern. Some of you may not even know what a test pattern is. Only Alan referred to the binding effect that he had, that uniting of the sometimes confused and very fledgling congregation. Jim Tompkins, pilgrim from fundamentalism to the liberal religion of humanism, was a pilgrim here, breaking ground for an ethic of tolerance, affection, and genuine respect for each other and for non-fellowship others with different views too. I am told by almost all old-timers I speak with that the congregation, a beleaguered little group in a very conservative area, tended to be uncivil at best toward differing views. Downright hostile and nasty occasionally, apparently. Jim always held that Unitarian Universalists stand for listening even in the midst of deep disagreement. He stood for the vision that a religious community such as ours simply must respect different points of view. He delivered a sermon in September of 1973, following a time of apparently extreme divisiveness. Perhaps it was at least partly about the Vietnam War, which horribly divided a lot of American churches. Jim never mentioned specifics that might be painful to the listeners, unlike some ministers I could mention. He speaks about how his, quote, heretical views hurt his father. And then he says, but we did more than tolerate the other. We respected the other's individuality. And that is what he was urging the church to do. He writes in that sermon words that show that the difficulties went deeper than one issue. And these words could be said today. He says this: enlarging the bonds of human sympathy through action and feeling are equally important. Those who have been estranged from our fellowship from a lack of warmth or from an inability to make their own lives actively meaningful through our programs should be encouraged to return, not merely by welcoming words, but by an enhanced reputation that here in this place can be found encouragement for all forms of creative initiative, that here the person is cherished regardless of competing values. There was a very difficult situation in the mid-70s involving a person who called himself something like a dual coordinate person, declaring falsely, according to professional opinions, that he was both Russell and Lorelei, and that he should be able to use either restroom and be with both the women's and the men's dorms at the church retreat and spend time with the children as either. He was apparently, by all accounts, and I've heard this story many times, he was obnoxious, he was in your face, he was self-centered, and he was incredibly disruptive. This was a big problem for Unitarian Universalists, we who accept such a wide range of diversity. Of course we let him be who he is, right? However, people were leaving the congregation in droves, and even the most stalwarts were thinking of falling away. Jim gave one of his most famous sermons called The Limits of Tolerance. And in it, he spoke of how a congregation is like a watch, in that it's not just the sum of its parts, but that the parts work together to make something far greater than any one part or even all the parts just added together. He reminded the congregation that they gather for certain purposes, working to fulfill them in a whole that fulfills and transcends our individual selves. He states unequivocally, without calling out the specific person, that there are times when the whole is being destroyed by one person, and that a group has a right to reject someone who is destroying community. Russell Lorelei was asked to leave and not return. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, there were at least two people who felt it wasn't handled properly and who left temporarily. There may have been people who left permanently. I don't know about them. I will close with Jim's closing words on the Limits of Tolerance sermon. He says, "While this discussion has touched upon some sensitive issues, our fellowship can only be strengthened and invigorated by facing problems squarely, avoiding all hypocrisy, and taking positive action in spite of misunderstanding. Let us not forget that the foundation of our association is the unity of spirit, with goodwill and order serving as cement, which binds us together in a fellowship of love." Facing problems squarely, positive action, goodwill, unity of spirit, order, above all, love. May it be so.